Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday School Hour for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
Good morning, everyone. I kind of gave Katie Hull a warning that I was going to mention her name. When Katie was laid up at home and she couldn't come because of her, you know, serious injury due to her accident, she made a comment. I don't know if it was just a text message or what on Facebook or whatever, but she said, "Michael, do you have any color other than black?" And I said, "Well, Katie, we're going to change that. He's not up here this morning, and I'm obviously not wearing black." So anyway, to get into our lesson this morning, I chose the topic God's vision, my vision, and then words do matter. And the reason I come up with this idea is this is something I need. Now, I'm going to try to present some ideas this morning, and I hope you can connect with them. But this lesson is the one that I need more than anybody here. Our small group study that meets on Sunday morning over in the front classroom at the crossroads, a couple of studies ago, we studied the book, Watch Your Mouth. And in the first chapter, the book was written by Tony Evans. And in the first chapter, he describes and he explains how dynamite was invented. Dynamite was invented by Alfred Nobel. He was a Swedish chemist, a Swedish scientist that had invented several things, a lot of things, but the biggest thing that he invented, the most important thing to his legacy, was the invention of dynamite. Because what had happened, he invented this, by the way, in 1866. What had happened 2 years prior to that, his younger brother was killed in an explosive accident. That explosive accident involved nitroglycerin. Before dynamite was invented or compounded, miners and construction workers used liquid nitroglycerin for an explosive element to break up rock, to do coal mining, to do all kinds of mining, rock quarries, everything. And it was so sensitive to motion, jiggling, whatever. If you remember any of the old Western movies, whenever they were, you know, carrying dynamite to an old gold iron ore mine or gold mine, they were carrying it ever so carefully. Or they had it in slings in the back of a wagon, like a hammock, to where it would cushion the ride. Because any type of jiggling, it was instant explosion. And very few people lived through that explosion. Well, Alfred Nobel found a type of soil that he could mix that nitroglycerin liquid into that gave it less, made it less sensitive, and to where it could be handled, and then it was wrapped, I think, in paper and cardboard, made into long sticks, and that way they could use it safely. Well, that changed the whole history of mining, construction, anything that required carving out of a mountain to make a passageway through. That changed the whole complexion of it. It made it so much safer. So many innovations came from that. Well, on the other hand, it also brought destruction. There was a good use of it, but then there was a bad use of it. And the destruction part was, it was also transformed into a form of a weapon. In the war times, they were able to make bombs out using the nitroglycerin, the dynamite. And the old Westerns, they would light a piece of dynamite and throw it at the enemy and, you know, cause destruction, cause death, but winning battles. Well, in that same token, if we don't use our tongue correctly, the tongue in our human body can be the most blessed part of our body, but it also can be the most destructive part of our body. Regardless of who we think we are and how important we think we are, the lighthouse, in other words, God, is always right. He never moves. He's always constant. The question I've asked myself, have I tried to tell God what He should do? Even when I try to set my own course, God is still in control. He sets the desired course. When we don't follow, guess what? Many times, bad things happen. In our speech and conversations, if they'll put on the screen James chapter 1, 19 through 26. And boy, that's small. I have to read off of this one. I can't see that one. It's called vision. It just doesn't stay with you very long. James chapter 1, 19 through 26. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like, but whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. Those who consider themselves religious and yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. That is a scary thought to me. Your religion is worthless if you don't control your tongue? Really? Who would have thought that? But if you don't control your tongue, what is it like? Dynamite. It's an explosive tool that can damage relationships for many years. James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17 states, "Why do you not know another thing? Why do you not even know what will happen tomorrow? What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, 'If it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that.' As it is, you boast in your own arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. Anyone that knows good and they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin to them." I'm used to reading that in King James. It's kind of hard to read it in NIV. But the first example I gave is not controlling the tongue as far as bitterness and anger. But the next one, not controlling the tongue, is how arrogant can we be in making our plans? How arrogant can we be in telling God what He needs to do and what we're going to do? But instead, if the Lord wills, we will do this and we will do that. Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20 is a passage that I always looked at in one way. But after we did this study, I have a little different take on it. Peter is probably one of the most impulsive disciples that there was out of the 12. I mean, he made decisions so fast and so quickly, it was kind of crazy to keep up with him. And to read this, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." "But who do you..." Let's see, I'm getting ahead of myself. "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, by what my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter," which means rock, solid foundation. "And on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the kingdom's keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Okay. Jesus made this revelation after some things that happened. First of all, quite a while before this, Jesus fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fish, right? Wow! Now, try that after Celebration Sunday and feed the congregation with 1 bowl of macaroni and cheese. Try it. Okay. He walked on water. He walked out to the boat and said, "Peace be still." This man got control over nature. Then he fed 4,000 with 7 loaves and a few fish. He had them all sit down. "Sit down, chill out. We'll take care of it." And then when they were done with the 4,000, they gathered up 7 full baskets of food. How many people like leftovers? Hey, yeah, they have plenty of leftovers. They started with 7 loaves and a few fish, and they had 7 full baskets left over. Okay, whenever they were leaving, they went to the region of Caesarea Philippi. Work with me on this. I'm thinking Peter's mind started cranking. The gear started turning. He's thinking, you know, we're under this Roman rule. We don't like it. They're oppressive. But hey, this guy shows up. He can feed all these people with next to nothing. He can walk on water. He can calm the storm. Wow. He is our man. He can overthrow this government. Yeah, he is the Messiah. God sent him to help us out. And to top it all off, he's making me in charge. I'm the man. I'm the man. I'm going to have the keys of the door. I'm going to set the rules. I am finally somebody. No more stinking fishing boat for me. I've got it made. Jesus has picked me. But then, meanwhile, back at the ranch, verses 21 through 23. "From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things at the hand of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, that he must be killed on the third day and be raised to life." Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said. "This shall never happen to you." "Lord, you can't be serious. You're the man. We've waited a long time for you. You can't do this. There's no way. You've controlled all this other stuff. You've stopped the storm. You've walked on water. Now explain to me how in the world you're going to be killed. That just doesn't fit my vision. Come on, Lord." Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Does anybody remember the story? We're going to, or the movie, sitcom. That's the word. Different Strokes. Some of them were telling on all of our age when we remember that. Do you remember Willis? And you remember Arnold? Whenever Willis would say something that just wasn't in Arnold's favor, what was his expression? What are you talking about, Willis? I'm thinking, Peter says, what are you talking about, Jesus? This isn't fitting my narrative. This is not fitting my idea. Do you all remember the story of, not the story, this is really going to tell our age. You remember the old show, Art Linkletter's House Party? Raise your hand if you do. Hey, there's several in here that remember that. Okay. There was a part in that program, that show, that said, kids will say the darndest things. Remember? Okay. I've got a story to tell you. I had two, but we're going to be short on time. I got too much material here. But anyway, got a story to tell you, and I'm going to tell on my little brother. He's not here. And every time that we would have a family dinner, all of our siblings, after lunch, we'd be sitting at the table, and we'd start telling the old stories. Remember when? Remember when? Does everybody else do that? Remember when in your childhood? Okay. I had an aunt and uncle and I'm not going to say their names. I'll make up names. Uncle Sam and Aunt Martha. About the time in his mid-60s, Uncle Sam had a midlife crisis. And he and Aunt Martha separated and divorced. He remarried. And, of course, it wasn't to any of the family's liking because it was a messed up deal. Well, anyway, one Saturday they let Mom and Dad know, he was going to come down for lunch. They lived in Galesburg. Okay? And so we'd been outside doing some work and everything. I was probably about 10 years old. And but my little brother, he was like five or six. But anyway, we were sitting at the table. Of course, before we went in, Dad had told us, guys, mind your manners. Don't say anything silly. That's the catchphrase. So we're sitting there at the table and eating meals, and dessert come around. And, of course, my little brother's sitting there at the table going like this, you know, looking at my uncle and his new wife. And anyway, as you say, kids can say the darndest things. When we were about done with dessert, it kind of got quiet. You know, adults have been visiting. And Jeff piped up and said, hey, I got a question. Whatever happened to good old Aunt Martha? Early form of dynamite. Meanwhile, Mom and Dad were trying to crawl under the table. You know, but it was an innocent question. But, and I have to give it to Uncle Ray. He took it like a champ and he said, Jeff, that's a good question. And just rolled with it. Also in this other passage, Peter referred to Jesus as Lord. Now, many times our vision, God's vision, and our vision, when we say, yes, Jesus is Lord of my life. What does that mean? What does that mean? Is it a term we use flippantly? Does it mean master? Is he a master of your life? Is he your guide? Is he your teacher? How about authority? Is he your authority in what you do, in the decisions you make? Because whenever you address somebody as Lord, that means you're a servant. You are a servant. In the book Watch Your Mouth, Tony Evans makes a statement, and that is, today's crisis in Christianity is the way very few desire to be servants. That is, they're not submitting to God, but we still want all the perks. We want to be blessed. We want to be healed. We want to be provided for. But please, God, keep your distance. Let me do it my way. We want our thing and everything. God is our ATM. You go up to the ATM, punch in your numbers, and your PIN number is, I'm okay, or I'm good. Don't bug me. Just let me do my stuff. But continue to bless me. When we went to the Intentional Conference in Decatur, they talked about a topic called secularism. How I'm okay, you're okay, no judgments, let's all live together in harmony and kumbaya and just everything will be all right. Well, there was a survey ran, and that survey, Roger Storms, from the pastor emeritus from the Compass Christian Church in Chandler, Arizona, that church ran a survey, nationwide survey, and here's the trend that they found out. Pardon my scratches, but I'm going to read these. The trend is 59% of millennials are leaving the church. The reasons, they feel the church is irrelevant. It doesn't matter to them. They want to do things their way. Then another reason is, the church is too extreme. You mean I got to do God's will? I got to do everything? I got to follow those teachings? Here's some statements. The best way to find yourself is to look within. Now this is man's vision. The best way to find yourself is to look within. 91% of Americans agree. And 76% of Christians agree. But God's voice in that, 1 John 5:12, whoever has the Son of Life, whoever does not have the Son of God, does not have life. In order to be fulfilled, you should pursue things that you desire the most. 86% of Americans agree. 72% of Christians agree with that statement. But God's voice in that matter, Matthew chapter 6, 33, but seek you first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be added as well. The highest goal in life is to enjoy it as much as possible. Live it up. 84% of Americans agree. 67% of Christians agree. Philippians 1:21 says, for to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And the last one, to me, is the most alarming. Any kind of sexual expression between two consenting adults is acceptable. 69% of Americans agree. 40% of Christians agree. 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee from sexual immorality. Do you think we have a vision problem in America today? The country in general, and also secularism, is having an effect on the body of Christ, whether we desire to accept that or not. Rule number one, God's always right. Rule number two, if you disagree, refer to rule number one. An example I want to give, I had several, but I want to give this just one example because we're going to run short on time. When the Israelites wandered through the wilderness, this is my idea of God's vision versus our vision. When the Israelites went through the wilderness, they left Egypt 600,000 men, plus wives. That makes 1,200,000, plus possibly 4 children per family is what the stats were back then. We're looking at about 4,200,000 people exiting Israel. And you'll show the camps. The daylight, there was a cloud over the camp. Pillar of cloud, night, pillar of fire. And whenever they left, Moses parted the Red Sea. They walked on dry land. When they got across, the waters came in on Pharaoh's army, right? Destroyed it all. They didn't have to lift a finger. And then, when they got into the wilderness, when they were traveling to Canaan, God provided manna. There was a dew on the ground at night. Toward the morning, when that dew dried and it all flaked up, they were commanded to go out and pick it up and clean it and grind it up and process it. I think that was the brainchild of made-from-scratch biscuits, but I don't know. It's very possible. Or Hi-Hop. Could have been pancakes, you know. But God provided for them. And another thing, it's kind of unusual. They took all their herds, their oxen and their sheep and their goats, but they didn't eat any of them initially. They took food with them, but when they ran out of food, that's when the manna was started to provide. But also, they got tired of the manna just by itself, so God brought of an evening quail come down and provided them with meat. They just had to capture the quail, process it, and eat it. And I kind of got thinking, too, maybe that was the brainchild of Quail Unlimited. I don't know. Could have been. But God provided for them. And then whenever they got in the wilderness, in the desert area, where they were running out of water, they murmured again to Moses and Aaron and said, "We need water. You just brought us out here to die. We'd have been better off in Egypt." Moses struck the water, struck the rock. Water came forward. And there was water for 4,200,000 people, plus livestock, everything. He provided absolutely everything. And I'm a little puzzled. I mean, I'm looking back at this at 2020 vision, right? They were looking at the here and now. Now, I can't imagine going on a camping trip with 4 million people. And I can't imagine a family reunion lasting 40 years. It just wouldn't be a good picture. But God provided for these people everything they needed. But yet, when it came to looking over the promised land in Numbers 13:26-33, they sent the 12 spies, a representative of every tribe. Moses picked them. They sent them to check out that land. I'm not going to read it because that's lengthy. But when they came back, after all God's provided for them, only two had faith that they could take the land. And whenever they said only two, all the others gave reasons. Oh, we're like grasshoppers. They'll just wipe us out. Sample of dynamite. It destroyed. God was so upset. He was so disappointed in his people. I brought these people out here. I'm taking them. My vision is to take you to the promised land. And yet, after everything I've done, you don't believe me. You don't believe I'm going to take care of you. Well, I want to ask you today, first a statement. Bad, negative criticisms or bad, evil thoughts can be like dynamite. Sometimes, many times, I've been guilty of engaging my mouth letting my mouth fly before my brain was engaged. Not thinking about what I'm saying. And I hope I haven't done that this morning. But my question to you is, as the praise team is coming up to get ready to sing the closing hymn, closing song, God's vision for my life versus my vision for my life. What do you think God's vision for your life is? To be a successful business person, successful father, grandfather, successful wife, mother, grandmother? I believe God's vision for you is to be the hands and feet of Jesus, to always be an encourager to each other. And also, God's vision for our church. Just how big and powerful is your God in your mind? Can He do all things possible? Or we're just like grasshoppers to this world. We can't whip them. We can't convert the sinner. We cannot convert our neighbors. We cannot go forward. We cannot make plans for the next 30, 40, 50 years. We can just be reactive instead of proactive. What is your vision of your God? How big is He? I've seen illustrations of people having gift wrap packages. One real small, you know, one as big as a piano. But how big is your God? Think about that as we go to our Father in prayer. Let's stand our feet, please.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.